Welcome. I'm Nancy O'Keefe, Human Design Specialist and Intuitive Business Coach, and you're listening to Business Success with Human Design on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. We broadcast every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. Listen online, on your mobile device, in your car, or ask Alexa to play Dream Vision 7 Radio. To learn more or for a full program schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Business Success with Human Design is proud to present our guest host, Mary Jo Rathgeb, who's going to look at keys to business resilience in changing times. Join us every third and fourth Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. to talk about how business owners can incorporate the 9 keys to resilience in their lives and their businesses. Being a business owner isn't easy, but it can be a path to growth and empowerment, resulting in satisfaction and success. And Mary Jo is here to help you navigate the journey.
Welcome to another episode where we are going to be discussing today the business resiliency keys of authenticity and courage. And with me today, my guest is none other than Justin Cunningham. And Justin is a street culture influenced results coach. He loves to help frustrated rock stars go big in their creativity, life, and business. And he's been a result coach for the last 14 years. I've known him for 6, and I haven't been talking to him much lately, but I just found out that he is launching a new streetwear clothes label for Gen X men just like him. And I can't wait to hear more about it, because Justin is the man of, I'm going to say, the pivot. That's what I like to think of you as. You are able to reinvent yourself and reinvent other people. And so that was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to have you as a guest on this show. Because when it comes to business resilience, I think that the ability to reinvent yourself when necessary is key. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic opening, and thanks for that lovely introduction. I've had many identities in my life. So streetwear designer is one of them. Mm. I'm very fortunate that the way that I'm built is I'm quite brave and prepared to take risk. Mm. And I'm aware that that is a gift I've been given. It can also be a problem, but it's helped me step into some pretty big spaces that really I didn't know what was going to happen next. For argument's sake, when I was 19, I was a sponsored skateboarder, and I was skateboarding with Tony Hawk and people like that back in the day, and I had an opportunity to leave my city and go up to the big city in New Zealand, which is not big by international standards, but it is in New Zealand, to run a skateboard park. And as you can appreciate, being a sponsored skateboarder, running a skateboard park at 19 in the big smoke sounded very exciting. Yeah. So I did. And it was. All the while, before that, I had also been introduced to this thing called rap music. And I was always interested in alternative culture, and I've always been a bit of a rebel. So I really loved that, but I was a committed skateboarder at that stage. Mm-hmm. A couple of years later, after skating with the biggest people in the world, I then returned to my home city and discovered my friends had started setting up this hip-hop radio show, and then I became much more immersed. But by that stage, it was still a side sort of project hustle. Mm-hmm. Then I decided that a few years later that I had done fashion design first year out of school, and I decided when I was about 26 that I really wanted to get back to that. So I started putting out the feelers to some people up in Auckland about designing a clothes range and how I could make it happen. eventually that came to fruition. And at the same time, I moved to Australia to set up a skateboard store and to design this clothes range and sell it around New Zealand and Australia. And it went very well. It was the first skateboarding hip hop crossover streetwear label in New Zealand. And we sold over $500,000 in year one. And that was very exciting until the owner of the business was over leveraged money wise. And it didn't keep going, which was heartbreaking. About the same time, at this stage, I'd been a freestyle rapper since I was 17, and I was now 30, so for 13 years.
Wow.
And there was a thing called battle rapping, which is like improvised rhymes where you score points against the other person. Most people have kind of seen versions of this with like theater sports or improv. So it's kind of like, yeah, anyway. So I was passionate about this. This was something I was very good at, improv. And so I decided, upon returning from Australia and setting up the skate shop over there and this clothes range now not being able to be another range being launched, I decided that's it. I'm going to start rap battles. So I did. And I had a lot of pushback. I was very nervous. Pushback because people thought that there would be conflict. But I just knew that in Australia I had seen rap battles and they weren't very good. And I knew there was a lot of talent in New Zealand. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So then I put together this event and I reached around to all my contacts. And by now I'd been involved in the hip hop rap scene for, you know, 13, 14 years. So I kind of knew everybody. And I was able to get people from all corners of the city to come in. And the event was a great success, you know, 400 people, wall to wall, packed out. And that launched me into the event management space, really. And 2 years later, I staged the first international rap battle in the world, New Zealand versus Australia.
Wow.
And then the next year, I took myself from New Zealand to New York to battle in the Rocksteady Crew Anniversary Battle, which is one of the most prestigious hip hop events in America, and made the final, but got beaten in the final, unfortunately. But when I returned to New Zealand, it was like I'd won, you know, New Zealand's version of American Idol. So, you know, it was a pretty grand thing. But before going, as you can appreciate, for the people that can't see me, I'm a white guy. and clearly I'm not American, you know, so, you know, taking myself over there by myself was pretty daunting. But I knew I had the capacity to do well. I had reached the national final twice in New Zealand and both times had not won and was very frustrated by this. And and then after that, I kind of gave up on the idea of winning. I was much more interested in the idea of progressing. So that was where, but I come from a family of five boys, so winning was very important. But that strategy I started to discover, because at this stage I'd also been a very active sports person, playing basketball and various things, and skateboarding is very hard on your body, and my knees and my back and things were starting to give way on me. So the idea of winning was starting to become a little bit far-fetched. And it was more about enjoyment. And so I had to have a bit of a shift there.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't play as much as I wanted to be at the top.
Right.
And to be honest, I don't really like doing anything unless I'm at the top. But what I realized was that was a bit of an ego thing and just a strategy that I'd had throughout my life, and that there were other strategies that could be equally satisfying. And so I kept producing these events for the next 5 or 6 years, and then, you know, the buzz wore off. And then unfortunately I'd also had some bad financial advice, and I faced a I had what's called a no asset procedure bankruptcy in New Zealand, which meaning that I didn't have a lot of assets, and so I had to call this in, which at the
Wow.
time for a proud man in business who just a few years ago was doing well,
Yeah.
was shameful. It felt I felt ashamed,
Yeah.
and it was very hard, but our Inland Revenue Department, our tax system, basically they were unwavering. I had paid off the principal of this issue, but they didn't care. I had all these fines and things on top, and they just didn't care. So I was like, okay, well, if you don't care, then I don't either. So so I pulled the plug.
Wow.
And that was difficult. And then, now what?
Yeah.
And
Well,
then,
I want to just
sorry.
pause for a second on their
Yeah.
story and just be like, wow. I mean, talk about resiliency and, starting with the skateboarding and the fashion design and the hip hop, and then going into the battles, and then creating this whole new, business model. Even being, you've had this like roller coaster ride almost of business enterprises, let's call them, right? And
I mean, I've had, again, I'm very fortunate to have been bred with unwavering confidence, sometimes to the point of ridiculousness when I'm not really organized or prepared, or I just kind of go, I can make it happen.
Right.
And New Zealanders as a culture are a bit different to Americans. We don't really have a lot of hierarchy here. So we don't think, oh, well, I'm not at that level yet. I can't do that. We have an attitude of, I'll give it a go. Anything. If
Are you
if you
saying
ever,
that's cultural
it's
versus
definitely
Justin?
cultural. You got a race, you got a Formula One car? Oh, we don't have a driver. Do you want to have a driver? Sure, I'll give it a go. Like it's that sort of attitude. And you see that a lot with the creative arts, like people like Taika Waititi, who comes in as a film director and does the biggest Marvel films in the world after being largely an art house director and completely reinventing the whole style of how those movies are done. Because he doesn't have that Hollywood, I've got to do it this way, otherwise I'm going to get fired. He's like, I don't care. I'm an artist and I'm going to do it this way.
Right.
That's a very Kiwi attitude. And it leads to originality.
Yes.
It's naive on some levels, but that naivety also leads to breakthroughs. And that's kind of something that I've always sort of found that I had too, was I intuitively know there are certain things that if I do them the right way, it's going to change the game. And I've proven that more than once, and I'll tell you about the next level of my reinvention in a
Yeah.
minute.
After the break. Yeah. I love this. I love this conversation so far. I mean, talk about courage. And one of the definitions of courage that we're using today is moving the ability to move through challenges gracefully and to really trust, from a human design perspective, your strategy. And for you, that is an authority. For you, that is that generator's gut response, and then also the riding that emotional wave, that you are talking about. You must have so many emotions, everything that you've been describing so far. And just to have the courage to move through those challenges with such grace. That's not the word you're using, but I'm using it with optimism, naivety, intuition, call it what you want. It's pretty amazing. And so we are going to go to our first break. And when we come back, we would love to hear, I'm speaking for everyone who's listening and myself, what your rise from this bankruptcy situation is, and how you are where you are today, which is not that. So stay tuned, everyone.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of DreamVision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
Are you happy at work or see it as a daily slog? Do you feel capable of meeting daily challenges and being energized by them? Or do you feel burnt out and chronically stressed? Owning and running a business can be hard, but it doesn't have to deplete you. Resilience is the ability to bounce back, to learn and grow from experiences. This quality is necessary during these changing times. Mary Jo Rathgeb, professional certified coach, RIM facilitator, and human design consultant, helps business owners build resilience while navigating big changes. By building emotional intelligence, managing mindset, and changing unproductive behaviors, business owners who work with Mary Jo create greater success by developing their capacity for resilience. To learn more, go to MaryJoRathgeb.com.
Okay, welcome back. So we are now again here with Justin Cunningham, and where we left was a cliffhanger from our first segment to where he is filing bankruptcy. And now we want to hear about his rise from the ashes of that. And so, Justin, what happened next?
Well, what happened next actually wasn't, I thought it was a rise from the ashes, but in fact wasn't. So I met my first wife in 2008 after also having some quite toxic relationships. And I thought that she was what I needed. But what I discovered is she's what I needed at that time because I had been under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
2 years into the marriage, my then wife was suffering from some very serious health conditions. And then a year after that, discovered that she had hepatitis C and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma stage 4.
Oh, wow.
So the relationship had shifted dramatically. And also what I was discovering was, is that whilst I thought that this relationship was right for me, what I discovered was it was right for me to recover from what I'd been through and not actually ideal. But it was very difficult to deal with because I'm somebody who commits. And when your partner is suffering from life-threatening illness, even if you're not feeling like you're in love and that this relationship is right, what do you do? And there's a lot of stigma around men doing the right thing with women.
Right.
And so I struggled with that. And I was going through a period of being retrained to in a thing called NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Right.
And so I was starting to understand about how I communicated, how I saw the world, and how I was processing things and why I was having some of the challenges that I was. And I also came to realize through a part-time job that I had, that I had a very strong need for approval. And these things were in conflict, trying to look after myself and you having a very strong need for approval. It was very difficult to navigate. I felt completely stuck. So I carried on in that relationship, but I personally started falling into depression. My then wife got on a drug treatment that got her through her illness and got through to the other side. We then decided we're going to move to Australia in 2017. And I thought at that stage, well, this is it. We had been to relationship counseling, and I was like, this is it. Like, if this doesn't change things, then something else has got to change.
Right.
So we went to Australia and again started again. And, you know, at this stage, you know, I'm 47. I'm not 27. I'm right. 47. So it was quite daunting. But I had been into Melbourne, the city in Australia, a few times and had some relationships. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. So I went over there and gave it a good go. And at that stage, I had now also pivoted to being a coach. In fact, I'd been a coach for the last five, actually longer than that. I've been a coach pretty much since I met my first wife. I'd started doing that because I'd always had a very encouraging and motivating sort of nature. And I love supporting people. And even as a running skateboard shops, I'd encouraged and supported skateboarders. When I ran the rap battles, I'd encouraged and supported other rappers to get better. And I'd been a mentor for the New Zealand Music Industry Commission and going to impoverished schools and helping kids find their voice. And I'd done a lot of this stuff. This had been a constant theme.
Wow.
And so, but it wasn't going to be the solution. It wasn't the solution. But while I was there in Australia, I was lucky enough to meet someone who was prepared to invest in an idea I had. And this idea I had was called Creative Supernova, which was an entrepreneurial event. Well, as you can appreciate, for creatively minded people that are looking to go out there, change makers. And I wanted to do it in LA. But did I have any network of support in LA? Did I know anybody in LA? Not really. So the investor had some relationships and a woman called Linda Kane, who runs a lot of big events for speakers on the West Coast and States. And so we put this event on and we had speakers from around the world, founder of Make-A-Wish, and the founder of Buy One, Give One, Paul Dunn, who's an amazing man, and a number of other leading people in that space. And it was very expensive and very challenging. And then the tickets weren't selling.
Oh, dear.
So from where I was, I had to go to Australia. Had to go to LA, I should say, for 7 weeks. Hustling to sell tickets, to put bums on seats, as they say here in New Zealand.
Right.
And there was me, myself, and I. That was the team. So I was literally going to networking events and any event I could go to and reaching out to all the speakers and saying, who do you know and how can I connect and what events are coming up and how can I get on them? And so I did that. And but lo and behold, it got harder again because my stepfather passed away.
Oh, no.
And my dog just died. So, and I couldn't return because I was in the middle of this. So as you can appreciate, this was a very, very dark and tough time. See, remembering now, I'm now separated from my first wife. My stepfather's died, my dog's died, and I don't know if my event is going to succeed.
Wow.
So I go to the last event, promo event before the big Creative Supernova launch, which was a 3-day thing at the Hilton in LA. And a woman walks in to this event, and I was quite taken. In fact, in my head, I went, she's above my pay grade, but damn, she's fine. And so then the host introduced me to her. And he introduced me to her like she was some sort of Italian sports car. And she said, this is Siddiqui Ray. And I was in my head going, yeah, you're damn right it is. And what I didn't know at that moment in time, and as you can appreciate, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm not feeling very confident. The last thing I'm looking for is a relation, a romantic dalliance. But she changed all that. So the
And
event
that's when I
eventually
met you.
happens. Yeah, that's right. And again, and I'm now married to Siddiqui. And we've been together for 6 years and married for three.
Wow. Well,
And
congrats.
so, yeah, thanks. So that all changed, and the event actually didn't really work financially. It was a bridge too far, but there were so many things that came out of that. Of course, my wife, many opportunities, but it also changed my ideas around who I was internationally. Like, am I on the level that that the best people in the world are? What's the gap between me and the top performers? And what am I worth? And in New Zealand, we are quite conservative with our money beliefs, unlike America, who seems relatively ready to invest as long as you can prove the value. They don't mind investing. New Zealand, that is not the case. People kind of go, yeah, I love that. That's great. Oh, yeah, but no. You're like, well, hold on, I've proved everything to you, but why don't you want to invest? So that sort of environment is quite difficult to feel confident about charging good amounts of money. And so America changed that for me. And I also came to realize that my money conditioning was from my mother, who was a solo mother bringing up five children. And that survival was my modus operandi. And so, yeah, again, so I came back to Australia and then back to New Zealand. And I was getting prepared to move back to America. And then 2 weeks before I'm about to leave, COVID strikes. So those plans were completely scuttled. And then I got Siddiqui out of LA. The day before our borders closed, she arrived the morning of the day our borders closed. I wouldn't be married. I wouldn't have a house with her. I wouldn't have any of these things if we hadn't done that. So,
And I
and
just want to pause for a
sorry.
moment. And is there anything that you want to share about, like how you knew that was the time to act, or not?
Well, the thing was is that, I could hear in Siddiqui's voice. Siddiqui is anyone that's met her knows that she's a very, very competent woman. She is a rock star in her own space. And she was really, really stressing out. And she also had asthma, and LA hospitals had no tests. There was no way of having any support. As people probably remember, Trader Joe's, all their shelves were getting emptied out, and it was just, crazy times.
Crazy times, yeah.
So after 3 days of trying to calm her down, I realized there was no calming her down, and there was going to be no chance of me going. So suddenly, being the calm, practical man, trying to sort it out type of thing, I was just like, that's just rubbish. I need to listen to what my wife, well, she wasn't my wife at that stage, but what I need to listen to what my partner needs, and what she needs is to get out and be safe. So I got her out and bought her a ticket to come back to New Zealand, and she'd only just gone back. And then we stayed with my mother, which, as you can appreciate, for my partner and then fiance and then wife, was very challenging. She had to upend her whole life, come to New Zealand, live with my mother. Now, my mother is a very liberal, lovable person. She's actually very easy to get along with. But Siddiqui didn't know that at the time. So, in the end, we called ourselves the Premium Bubble. That was the name for our little COVID group. And then during that time, I got engaged to Sid, and we got married in Christchurch and had a COVID wedding. And again, that was challenging. We had about 12 people in the room and about 200 people on Zoom with cameras filming what was going on. It was quite the production. And then we moved up to Auckland after all that drama. And then a year later, bought a house and got a couple of puppies. By this stage, I had started getting quite taxed with coaching. And the reason I was getting taxed with it was because what I discovered was so much of coaching is based on some illusions. So the first one being, if you learn more, you'll earn more. Rubbish. What I discovered that a lot of people, the reason why they pursue more education is a sabotage mechanism based on fear of being judged. So what they'll do is, I need to get ready. I need to get ready. I need to get prepared. I need to get ready. I need to get prepared. I need to get ready. And I need to prepare for getting ready.
Right.
And so, you know, plans and planning and some more planning and all that sort of stuff. And if that sounds familiar to people, you're not alone. There's a lot of people out there like that. But that was very frustrating for me, who's quite bold and again, likes to go big. And I just sort of felt I'm so sick of supporting people that don't take action. And what am I getting out of it?
Right.
How am I being expressed? How is this helping me get better? And the short answer is it wasn't. So I'm now facing a difficult time. I've bought a $1.6 million house with a very large mortgage. And I got support from my family to make that happen, but the mortgage was on me and Sid. and with coaching together, you know, we could meet that mortgage. But now I was like, I think I'm going to change again. So again, you talk about a test of resilience. I've never had this much overheads in my life.
Wow.
And now I'm thinking about changing tack. And so I had some money put aside and, you know, took a bit of a break and recalibrated and decided that I was going to go in a different direction. And I set up a company with a friend of mine who was a very successful CTO and called the company Light Virtual. And we were going to do augmented reality, virtual reality applications and then an AI. But what we discovered there was, even if you come up with a good idea, if you get investors at the start, they'll own you for the next 10 years and you can't escape. So that turned into we decided, well, we need to put money aside. But as I said, New Zealand is a very small place. There's only 5 million people in the whole country, and getting great paying jobs and, you know, is difficult here. And so that didn't eventuate. And all the while through that year, I just kept getting this calling to get back to the things that I'd already had success with and never really wanted to stop. And that was design, clothing, styling. I've always been very good at styling people. When I was working in retail, it was one of the best things for me to do. And all my female partners had loved the fact that when they go shopping, I'm a man that will go shopping with them and then pick out all the stuff for them to wear and suits their body shape and body type. And you know, women would often look at me in these shops going, I think maybe they had some sort of an idea that any man that understands fashion must be effeminate. but that was something that I just found easy. And so I started building this concept called Street. Now, as you can appreciate, having been involved with street culture and this sort of stuff for many, many years, I had a lot of insights. And I had success with clothes design. So I'm now very close to launching a street magazine, a street fashion event, my own clothes range. And then within the clothes range, I've got what I call an uptown range and a downtown range.
Wow.
And the uptown range is more subtle and quality orientated for, you know, people probably in my age group. or 40 and over, really. And the downtown is more sort of, you know, in your face statement, bold, you know, for a younger demographic. And that's where I'm at today. And that's what I'm building. And by the middle of the year, I'm hoping to have all of that launched and out into the world, and we'll see what happens from there.
Wow, that is so amazing. What a story. And remember at the very beginning, I was like, you are the man of the pivot. And this is totally being out that way. And I totally appreciate your raw authenticity with sharing your story as well. You know, it's quite an amazing story, and I think it's actually quite inspirational for many people.
I think that what I've discovered is a lot of people look at personalities like mine. You know, I'm a front man. I come across as confident and a bit bulletproof, you know, like, and I'm anything but that. And what I discovered was I have a bit of a need for approval. I try and, you know, mitigate that as much as possible, because it's not generally that healthy to be, you know, responsive all the time to other people's feedback, because the humans are just judgment machines, and often their judgments are miscalculated. So I think it's always good to know that those supposed rock stars, those supposed big superstars, you know, they're going through it. Bravery costs. You know, there's a lot of fear right next to bravery.
Right.
And that, but what I discovered through this journey, and as you will have heard it from everything that I've shared, is that if there's fear, it's near. And in fact, now I know if I'm afraid, good. That means there's something great right there. And again, what I discovered was that whilst the mind is convincing you to keep safe, that does not help you grow.
Right.
And that making mistakes is conducive to your success.
Yes, I love that. Yes, and I feel like there are so many more golden nuggets that you have that you can share with us. So we are getting ready, actually, to come to our next break. And when we come back, I would love to hear more golden nuggets from you, particularly in what you have learned, not just about yourself, but about other people through your entire journey. And it sounds like, you know, when you were talking about the coaching, you learned a lot of things about people, but you were just starting to rattle off all these really juicy nuggets. So
yeah, I'd love to share that with you.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Justin is going to share his street wisdom with us. And we're going to get some really practical tips for how to navigate the ups and downs of business ownership, creativity, ideas. And, you know, and I'm also thinking there could be inspiration for all those rock stars out there who are holding themselves back. So we will be back in just a moment.
Can't seem to get in the flow of consistent clients and consistent income? People do business with people they know, like, and trust. How can clients know, like, and trust you if you're not showing up authentically? Discover your unique human design and attract the clients you were meant to serve. Nancy O'Keefe, certified human design specialist, intuitive business coach, helps women peel back the layers of who they've been taught to be to reveal who they truly are so they can build an abundant business that feeds their soul. Nancy has been coaching business owners for over 25 years and is passionate about helping them to understand their divine design and their personal formula for success. Book your human design reading today at nancyokeefcoaching.com.
Are you curious about your human design? Your chart holds sacred information that can help you get clarity around your life purpose, uncover your natural skills and talents, reveal your business genius and how you're wired to serve in the world, and help you be authentic by shedding all of the things you've been told you have to do and be so you can follow your true life path. This is the best way to find ease and flow, peace, and an abundant life and business. If you're ready to dive deep into your human design and see what it holds for you, take a look at my new course, Human Design 101. It's a self-paced course with optional, live, supportive Q&A calls, and this is your chance to live your life how it was designed to be lived. You can learn more at nancyokeefcoaching.com. Check it out.
Welcome back. We are here with Justin Cunningham, who over the break, we were talking about his work with clients, and we were talking about his, when I introduced him in the beginning, I said he's a result coach and consultant, and he said that actually he calls himself a resultant because he gets results for people. And I wanted to segue into more of your like professional work that you do with clients, because that is, you have skills that you have power skills there that shine. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that people understand and know about that part of you. So, and you started like dropping all of these golden nuggets in the last segment. So I was just like, oh, Justin has some wisdom. He has some wisdom to share. And so I want to share it with everybody who's tuning in and listening. So I'd love to hear a little bit about the work that you do with clients. You said that you have this process. And so tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I was sharing in the break with Mary Jo that I find that a lot of coaching and the online marketing space is built on some assumptions and illusions that really aren't true. And one of them is that if you learn more, you'll earn more. Mm-hmm. And in reality, that, again, is a mechanism to stop you from taking action. The other one is that it's easy. If you just do what I do, you'll get the results I got, mm-hmm. you know, which is just not true. And what happens is that if you start following those philosophies, all those coaches and masterminds and courses and programs, is that they're designed for you to stay in their ecosystem. And they're also designed around the fact that you're nearly there, you're nearly there, you're nearly there, but you'll hardly ever get there because there's things they're not telling you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for example, Facebook ads, mm-hmm. he who spends the most wins. That mm-hmm. is a common maxim for everybody that does paid ads. But most coaches and people will just not tell you that. Mm. And so what I discovered was, okay, so if that's the case, if most people don't have budget, if most people aren't prepared, if most people don't have infrastructure, then what can you do? And which is often the case for 90%, 95% of people that are in business, especially in small business and medium size. So I started looking at, you know, the 80-20 rule and the most transformative things you could do. And I had studied under people like Jay Abraham, who's Tony Robbins' coach, and learned these kind of really transformative ways of looking at business. And what I discovered was, is that, and I had always sort of had this gift, was I can make the complex simple, a little bit like Mary Jo does with human design. And simplicity is power. When you can say something simply, it's very, very powerful. It's not easy, but it's very powerful. And when you go to most business owners, especially if they're owner operators, their number one challenge generally is leads, sales leads. Mm. In other words, how do I find quality people? How do I get into good conversations? And how do I turn that into something?
Right.
And that requires you to be unique. It requires you to stand out. The problem is most unique sales propositions are not unique at all.
Mm.
And unique value propositions have now become commoditized too.
Mm.
So what's the only thing left that's unique? You. But most people do not know how to position themselves as a superhero to their potential target market. And what I discovered was people don't understand that the people that are opposite you think you're amazing. For example, most creatives just want to create more. They don't want to concentrate on numbers. So then when they meet someone who's detail-orientated, linear, and good with numbers, they're like, wow, you're amazing. How do you do that? That's incredible. They're a superhero. But if you say to the average accountant or finance person, you're a superhero, they look at you like, I'm an accountant. They don't understand that there's people out there that think that your gifts are otherworldly.
Mm.
Conversely, linear, detail-orientated people look at creatives, well, say people like myself who can articulate, you know, verbally and creatively, you know, why you stand out and why you have X factor. They look at me like I'm some sort of an alchemist.
Mm.
And I have a client right now in Texas who just every call at the end, he says, oh, I just can't believe how much value you give and you're so much better. And this would have taken me so long. And you just understand, you just get me, you know, you didn't try and sell me on your system. Mm. You know, you reframed and reflected what I did better than I could ever have done it.
Mm.
And you just work with the way I am. And that is what I would consider my specialty, is to understand that about people,
mm-hmm.
whether you're introverted or extroverted, detail-orientated, creative, whether you have a long attention span, a short attention span, whether you have a lot of energy, very little energy. And I understand that too, because I've suffered from fatigue challenges since I was 31.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get that, and I love working with people. And the term I use around this is I say I'm a fire starter.
Fire starter.
Yeah. And so that's what I do, but I'm also trained as an international sales trainer. So I've worked with a lot of people. I've had consultations with very large media players and talked to them about their sales process and fixed what they're doing in terms of their proposition and, you know, generated an extra $100,000 a month for them in sales. I work with the leading franchise owner of OsteoStrong, which is a skeletal strength conditioning business that's throughout America, and helped them grow their average sale by 37%, again, by shifting a few things mm-hmm. and showing them just simple systems that work well. I'm very fortunate in that I'm left and right brained. So I can understand the emotional, the personal, the creative, and I can understand the pragmatic, systemic way of doing things. And those are the things that I love doing. I don't want to have a relationship with you for 10 years. I want to come in and observe you for 10 years after the work we've done and see the change. Because, you know, I think that a lot of people, you know, these coaches and consultants and all stuff, at first they're a blessing,
mm-hmm.
But they can very quickly turn from a blessing into a parasite.
Mm.
So I'm very cognizant of that. And also my personality is such that I love doing sprints with people. And if people don't know that term, it's a term from project management, meaning you set, say, 90 days and you do a sprint to get to an outcome.
Right.
And I find that that is effective for me, and it's exciting also for the client.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And that's part of that whole results orientation as well.
Yeah, yeah. Again, change can happen in one conversation.
Mm.
I remember working with a design client, and they had said that they want to put up their prices, and they didn't really feel confident that they could do that because there are a lot of design places around, and they felt like, you know, they've got to keep their prices the same way. And I said, well, first off, you're not holding a gun to anyone's head. You're just offering them more. You're just giving them more offers to look at. So you're giving away certain things that you could charge for. So put that into the bundle and give it a value. So she started doing that. And again, that increased her average sale by 32% just by charging for the things she was giving away. But also what she found was her clients wanted their work done yesterday. So we created a rate card, and she's a Christian, and she came up with some really cool little names. And she said, I've got light speed, warp speed, and God speed. And so one of them was like, you know, get it done in 3 days. One was get it done in 2 days. And one of them was like, get it done in 24 hours.
Wow.
And what happened was, because she had that offer, a lot more people took her up on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could see, and she, and I got her to explain to the clients, I have to put other work to the side if you want to be prioritized. Therefore, there's going to be a fee for that, as you can appreciate. Just that, just what I just said then, is the reason she generated the extra 32%.
Wow.
And that is one sentence. I mean, I think that conversation we had took us about, I'm going to say, 15, 16 minutes.
Mm.
Now, you think about that. If you could change your average sale by 32% in a 16-minute conversation, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's how fast these things can happen. And in fact, I've got to be honest for myself. Sometimes it's hard for me to know how to charge for these things because I know how transformative they are.
Right.
but I can do them very, very quickly.
Right.
So that is the stuff that I love to do with people. And it's exciting, especially when you've been struggling to figure out how to escape, you know, flatline growth for quite some time. You feel stuck. You're like, how do I get to the next level? I feel like I've tried everything.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting for me. And as you can appreciate, for the client when they finally have that breakthrough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are coming down to the wire with our interview. And so before we go, this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you, Justin, for your authenticity, for your courage in sharing everything that you have with us today. And I would really love to let people know that you do more than just the 15-minute conversations. You actually also help people create content if needed, right?
Yeah, that's right. As you can appreciate, I've been a writer, a communicator, a wordsmith, you know, for most of my life. So I love positioning people as the rock stars, as I say. But as you'll have picked up also from what I said, rock stars aren't just extroverts. It's about how we position you to the right people. And it brings me a lot of joy. It's exciting, and it does feel like alchemy. It feels like something has really changed energetically about what I'm doing now. And that fuels new growth. And that's what I love to do with people, is create that stuff for them. And being a creative, of course, what do I want to do? Create more. So it's a win-win.
Awesome. And so for anyone who is looking for help, you know, with finding what their inner rock star or superhero skills are, look to Alchemist. And I'm giving you a new name now, Alchemist Justin Cunningham. And if you really want his help, you can book a results call with him by going to his Calendly link, which we can include when we promote this, but it's calendly.com/Justin Cunningham/in-person-meeting. So with that, thank you, Justin. And it was such a pleasure talking with you today.
Thanks so much, Mary Jo. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Thank you for joining Business Success with Human Design. And a special thank you to my guest host, Mary Jo Rathgeb. Join us next time to discover how you can get in the ease and flow of life and out of business overwhelm with human design. Business owners spend a lot of energy conforming to the rules of business, but we'll show you how you can pursue your business based on who you were born to be and how you were born to serve for the ultimate success. Connect with us at nancyokeefcoaching.com or maryjorathgift.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.